Yesterday we reflected on Jesus cleansing the temple, purifying the temple. He drove out the money changers and the people selling animals for sacrifice. It was both a practical action and a symbolic action. It was, yes, to drive out the animals and the money changers, but it was also to show the necessity of cleansing, of being cleansed, of Him cleansing us all of sin, of any tendency to make what belongs to God or act as if what belongs to God belongs to us, making God's house our marketplace. It was a cleansing. How successful was it? Well, it's hard to say because they turned against Him after that. In today's gospel, Jesus is in Nazareth and He's actually doing something similar. He doesn't take a whip of cords and drive out animals. There weren't any animals in the synagogue of Nazareth, but He was trying to cleanse the people of an inner disposition that was defiling them. Again, it's something like what He was doing in the Jerusalem temple. That attitude which puts us at the center and not God, which makes the house of God belong to us instead of to God, or makes us the standard by which we judge everything rather than God the standard. He knows that the people of Nazareth have this problem, so He brings up this issue, or these examples of what happened in the days of Elijah with the widow, and what happened in the days of Elisha with the leper. There were lots of widows, there were lots of lepers, but the ones who were cured or helped were foreigners, outsiders. Why does He bring this up? Well, it's part of His attempt to keep them, His attempt to shatter their idea that they're at the center, that they can determine what God is supposed to do and not do. God is supposed to help the chosen people. He's not supposed to help the foreigners, but He does help the foreigners. So who's in charge here, you or God? It's that kind of, he's shaking the false foundation that they're standing on. Does it work? Well, no, it doesn't really work. What the reaction of the people of Nazareth is quite bad. They decide that they have to eliminate Jesus, which is to eliminate His challenge to their way of thinking. So they want to throw Him over the cliff. And the end result is He walks through their midst and leaves them behind. So, and this is the sad result of our firm determination to do things our way or to be in control. What happens is we end up losing the very thing that we actually seek. We end up driving away the one who has the power to free us, and we end up enslaved. So the sad thing is they end up with nothing. They don't have Jesus anymore. I don't know if He ever went back to Nazareth after that. I can blame Him if He didn't, because they tried to kill Him. So it ends badly. The first reading, which is one of the examples, which gives one of the examples that Jesus refers to, it ends beautifully. So let's spend a little time reflecting on this first reading. This is the story of Naaman the leper. Now we're going to call him Naaman because that's the American pronunciation. When I came to the Philippines, I learned that his name was Naaman. But since we use Naaman, I'll try to stick with Naaman. But you know who we're talking about. This commander of the Syrian army, a very high official and a rich man, powerful man, who is afflicted with leprosy. Now, in this narrative about Naaman, the leper, Naaman the Syrian, you'll see a whole series of challenges to one's inner attitude. So this is much more than a cure of leprosy. This is a story about inner change or inner cleansing. Yes, Naaman is cleansed of leprosy, but he's also cleansed of pride. So this whole story is full of these examples, and I think it's a beautiful one. It's a great Lenten instruction for all of us. Naaman, after all, represents us all. He is a combination of power and weakness, of richness and poverty, of health and sickness. He's both, and this is what we are. We are made in the image and likeness of God. We have freedom, we have capability. We might not be rich exactly, but we have a lot going for us. Yet we are also sinners. We're twisted, we have fallen, we're defiled, we're sick. Both. The question is going to be, well, which of these two aspects of our life will we depend on? Will we depend on our strength and our capabilities and our money and our whatever we have? Because if we do that, of course, we'll fail. Or will we rely in our weakness, in our need? Will we rely on God? Will we submit ourselves to God? If we do that, oh, we end up being cleansed. So it's, I'm setting out the parameters ahead of time. Then you see how it works. Okay, here's Naaman. He's a valiant leader, well esteemed, highly esteemed, respected by his master, victorious, but he's a leper. The first person to introduce hope here is the least significant in the whole story. Here's a little girl. Not only is she a little girl, which is like the weakest person in the hierarchy, she's little, she's young, she's a girl, she's a slave, she's a foreigner. She's about as unpretentious and unimportant as you can get to a man like Naaman. And she comes up with this idea that if Naaman would just go to the prophet, he would cure him of leprosy. So, and notice, this is what starts the whole process. This little girl. Littleness, see, and she has no sense of her own power. She doesn't think anything of herself, but she does know something that would be of great value to Naaman. So she tells the Naaman's wife. Naaman's wife tells Naaman. Naaman says, well, okay. And this is the extraordinary thing. He actually accepts this seemingly foolish idea, and he goes to his own king and says, you know, I'd like to go and get cured by the prophet in Samaria. That's the prophet Elisha. The king of Aram also accepts this wild idea. Oh, okay, going to be cured of leprosy? Go ahead. He sends a letter. You see how from the least to the greatest, from the slave girl to the king, there's an acceptance. There's a willingness to submit to this possibility that God could work. It's not clinging to power. Okay, so it starts out very beautifully. Then he writes the letter to the king of Israel. He, with this letter, I'm sending my servant Naaman to you that you may cure him of his leprosy. Of course, it sounds to the king of Israel like a setup. Of course, his first reaction is he's going to use this as a trick because I can't cure a man of leprosy, so he's going to have something to accuse me of. First reaction of a typical of a king. I'm in charge of everything. You challenge me to do something I can't do. Well, you're trying to pull something on me. So he tears his garments. He doesn't think any good can come of this. Elisha sends a message to the king and says, well, what are you doing tearing your garments? Why don't you send him to me? Of course, Elisha is a prophet, so he's used to depending on God, being an instrument of God. The king accepts it. Again, the first reaction would have been, if he clung to that first reaction, it blocks the unfolding of God's plan. But he accepts Elisha's idea and he sends Naaman to Elisha. So Naaman goes there with his horses and his chariots and his 10 festal garments and 10 silver talents and 6,000 gold pieces. He's got the whole argument in place. Now, this is why you should cure me. I got a lot of money. And Elisha says, oh yeah, go wash in the Jordan 7 times. Little, simple. He doesn't even bother to go out and say hello. He just says, go wash in the Jordan 7 times. Naaman's first reaction, we know, this is what we know, Naaman, yeah. He reacts with a bit of violent rage. He went away angry. This prophet, here I came all this way, with all this money, with all these credentials, with my letter, with the kings on my side. And you tell me to wash in the Jordan? Come on. Can't you do better than that? First reaction, which threatens to block the whole thing. Anger. Not anger at an injustice, but anger at the indignation of being not being treated properly. You see, it's selfish anger. It's not just, it's not righteous anger. It's pride, really, pride. Who comes to the rescue? Again, the little ones, the servants. The servants come up. Oh, my father, if the prophet had told you to do something extraordinary, would you not have done it? Great logic. Wouldn't you rise up and do the difficult, heroic thing? Of course he would, because it would fit his self-image. It would put him in charge as if he was healing himself. Oh yeah, I climbed the mountain or I made the great effort. Great logic. Now, all the more, since he told you to wash and be clean, shouldn't you do it? It's actually simpler. Submit. Submit. Don't stand there in your angry pride. Submit. And to his credit, Naaman does what he's told. He plunges into the Jordan 7 times, which is a prefiguration of baptism, of course, cleansing by water. And it works. He's cured. There's a little clue here about what really happens. His flesh became again like the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. Not only was he cleansed physically, but interiorly he became childlike. He became innocent. He became submissive. He became accepting of his dependence on power greater than himself. And he goes back to Elisha in order to acknowledge, the one who I'm thanking here is the God of Israel. It ends beautifully because the little girl submitted, the king submitted, this other king submitted, the servants submitted, Naaman submitted, Elisha submitted. Everybody cooperated with God, and God healed the man. A great cleansing, a great story about purification cleansing. Of course, the message for us is to be little, to be willing to do things God's way, to let go of that first reaction, that indignation, that demand that we be recognized or that demand that we be in charge. Let go of that. It will happen. I mean, we certainly react that way, especially when we're insulted. We feel like someone, or even God himself, is not doing it right. We might react, but let go of that. Listen to that little voice that says, wait, can't you just try this little thing? Can't you be little for a moment and let this happen the way God seems to be doing it? So this is what we're being taught. We learn the way of littleness. The way of purification is not that we purify ourselves by all our heroic deeds, our prayer, fasting, and almsgiving, but we let God purify us by submitting to Him, to His power, His mercy.